Hey, Christine.
Yo.
You know, this Sunday is a live show.
I know. I'm nervous.
You should be, because we're selling out and tickets are going fast. So if you haven't gotten your ticket yet, it's at the Gary Marshall Theater at 7:30 p.m., GaryMarshallTheater.org.
That's right.
Get your tickets right away. They're going rather quickly.
Yeah, our special guest is Danielle Fishel from Boy Meets World, Girl Meets World. She's a 90s pop icon. You'll definitely want to ask her some questions. We are currently still taking questions at worsteverpodcast@gmail.com. You can email them to us. What am I going to wear?
I have no idea.
I don't fit into anything.
it's about Danielle anyway.
It really is. But you can still come and see us and my pregnant belly. My daughter Georgia will not be there, and neither will the dogs. So for once, it will be a really, really private and quiet podcast. However, Stephen Ray Morris will be there. So find us this Sunday, GaryMarshallTheater.org, and we'll see you there. This episode of Worst Ever Podcast brought to you by RX Bar.
I love them.
I love the RX Bar. They're my favorite bar right now.
You know, they come in like 11 different flavors.
I just love how chewy they are.
Delicious.
They're amazing. Georgia likes them too. We share them in the car. We have them for snacks.
Well, you
can
give them because they're so healthy.
They are gluten-free, they're soy-free, they're dairy-free.
There's no added sugar.
And all of the ingredients are actually on the packaging, so you can see what it is. There's no BS. It literally says it's like 3 egg whites, 2 dates, 6 almonds. That's it.
It's delicious.
So whether you like sweet or savory, chocolate or fruit, there is an RX bar for you. Go to rxbar.com/worst and enter promo code worst at checkout for 25% off your first order.
25% off?
Isn't that a deal?
I'm getting them right now.
Georgia, say RX bar. The worst moments of our life.
Hey girl, hey, that's bad.
So speaking of like worst ever experiences.
That is the worst ever.
I don't feel so good.
And that was my worst audition ever.
How bad can it be?
And we feel the pain is best or funny. Welcome to Worst Ever Podcast.
Welcome to Worst Ever Podcast.
I'm your host, Christine Lincoln.
No, you're not.
I'm your host.
I am.
I'm your host, Christine.
I'm your host, Allah.
Nobody can even understand you.
I'm your host, Allah Khalid, and that's my friend, Christine Lincoln, who's pregnant.
I'm so really, pregnant.
Really, really. Listen, you're carrying so differently.
I know.
She sends me a picture because she's about to test for this show. I can't say what the show is, but.
But yeah, so 2 weeks ago, I'm almost 4 months pregnant and I find out I'm testing for a show.
So cool. She's got to cover it up. But I had seen her the week before and she barely was showing. So it wasn't a big deal. So then she sends me this picture and you'll have to put it on the Instagram.
Sure.
And she goes, from a scale of 1 to 10, how pregnant do I look? And I first go, is that for real? And then I said, did you add padding? I thought she was joking. And she's like, no, it's for real. And I go, then a 9.9. Because I'm like, how are you going to cover that up?
Yeah, it was not easy. Let me tell you
this. I mean,
it
went for a week.
A week. I went from reading for the first time for this to then figuring out I was testing, and a week went by and I'm like, oh my God, I can barely get these pants on. Like, this is a problem. So I just did like the fat man, like, you know, like blouse out. I like tucked a really blousy shirt in and then just kept blousing it. And then I put on a blazer because that could hide the sides. My mom literally said the night before, she's like, how are you going to hide that thing? I was like, I don't know.
Oh my God. So anyways, she did not get the job.
Yeah.
But it had nothing to do with her pregnancy, I don't think.
I don't think so. But let me tell you this. Had I been filming that pilot right now, I would have been carrying a lot of big purses.
Big, giant purses.
Giant purses.
Walking behind couches.
And walking and bringing in groceries.
Right. And and the good thing about not getting the job is that the person that did get the job is like Christine's like all-time.
She's such a nice person, but we are always up against each other. And the last two jobs she has gotten.
So
it's weird.
The good thing is now this girl is working and tied up. So yeah. Now the next job is
and we
Christine's.
Couldn't be more different, which is awesome.
You guys
the other
look nothing
thing.
Alike.
She's tall. I'm not.
She's probably just funnier than you.
There you go, Siri. Siri's not sure he understands what you just said because that couldn't be true. But thanks. You're not my friend. All right. Let's get to our guest today.
Yeah,
I'm very excited. He's my friend.
I just met him.
I know. You guys would know him from the 90s. He was on Boy Meets World and then on Girl Meets World in the 2000 15s, 16s. You would know him from Guardians of the Galaxy. You know him from Kim Possible. You know him from Batman.
It's a cartoon, right?
It's a cartoon. Oh, he does a lot of voices.
Okay.
Will Friedle.
Hello.
Hello, Will.
Hello.
Let's talk about your name for a second.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is it Friedle? Is it Friedle? Or is it Friedle?
Yes.
All three.
Well, it's Friedle if you're on my side of the family. It's Friedle if you're on the side of the family that we don't speak to.
Okay.
Is that your father's side of the family?
No, I don't even. I'm just kidding. No, there's Friedles that we don't talk to. We like literally they're the Friedle family that we really don't have anything to do with. And then there's the Friedles.
Well, because the spelling is what threw me off.
Yeah, it's pronounced exactly like it's not spelled. So it's one of those things. It should be it's German, so it should be Friedel, but we say Friedel. We just did, I think, when my family got here, whenever the hell we got here from wherever we came from.
Do you have a middle name?
Yes, I do. Alan.
Well, so is it William?
It is. It's William Allen.
William Allen.
Yes.
But no one says Friedle.
No, that's more Italian. No, I get a lot of Friedel, a lot of Friedel. Uh-huh. So yeah, but it's Friedle. Yes.
Okay. All right. Yes. Now we got that out of the way.
All right. I'm curious because you started, are you from California?
No, I was born and raised in Connecticut.
Okay.
My family's still there.
Great.
So I started my professional career at the Harvard stage. When I was 10.
The Harvard stage.
It was wonderful. Fancy.
It was fancy. Freddo. It was so fancy, and I had no idea how fancy it was. I was 10, and I was in a production of The Doll's House with Mary McDonald.
Wow.
David Strathairn, Jerry Bamman, Mark Lamos was the artistic director. And again, I was 10, so I was only in the first part of the play. I still don't know how the play ends because I always had to leave early.
Yeah.
I had no idea who I was working with at the time. It was just, you're 10, so it was one of those things. And then I begged my parents to let me get a manager. They're both lawyers, so they were like, "Why? You're not going to be in the entertainment industry."
Well, how did you get the audition in the first place?
I was just, I loved entertaining in school. It was one of those things. I'd put on a play. We had Free Friday starting in like kindergarten. And I would get every Free Friday, I would put on a play. And it was always Stone Soup. You remember Stone Soup?
Yeah.
Which was like the greatest play. You don't remember Stone Soup? The soldiers come to town. And there's a village there, and they have no food, so they go over. They go to the center cook pot, and they start putting rocks in there. And villagers are coming out, going, "What are you doing?" They're going, "We're making stone soup." And the only thing we're missing are carrots. And the villagers go, "Oh, I have carrots." By the time they're done, they have like this meat soup. It's a great play. It's a great play when you're in kindergarten because it's very easy to put on.
I was Middle Eastern. Grown up in a poor family in New Orleans, so we didn't have the stone soup.
I don't buy your backstory for the record.
No, I'm 100% serious. I've never heard stone soup.
Stone soup was a great, yeah. So started doing that.
Did you Mullins know stone soup?
It sounds familiar to me.
You are
it's
such
in
a liar.
The recesses of my mind.
It is. It's like that play that every kid did.
I'm going to look it up now because I've never.
It was great. It's like doing Our Town in middle school.
Yes.
Or like, you know.
Everybody. Or Robin Hood.
In elementary school, the show I did was Bambi.
Why would you do Bambi?
Yes.
Did the show start like the cartoon with the death of Bambi's mother?
That's so macabre.
Yes.
Come on.
No, it ends with. I forget how it. I think it ends with Bambi's mother. But my brother, I played Bambi. I played Bambi, and my little brother played
Thumper,
our child from at the end. I guess Bambi and Feline get married, and you know it was the whole thing. Yeah,
Thumper.
Thumper was a girl, and I remember her song was it was a musical, and her song was "If you can't say something nice, shh, say nothing. Take a bit of good advice, shh." Say nothing.
Yeah, you should remember that song.
Yeah.
But no stone soup. Weird.
Never got stone soup.
That's bizarre.
Okay, so you were Bambi and DJ Khaled was your offspring.
Yes. Nice. And he was my offspring.
Nice.
And probably why he still hates me to this day.
There you go. That's
and my mom made the costumes.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. We weren't like that.
All right. So then you do this show and
I did.
It, at the Harvard.
At the Hartford stage.
Hartford.
This whole time.
Hartford, where I'm from.
You're
Hartford.
A voiceover actor.
Too.
You can't even pronounce Harvard.
You didn't hear it right. I said it right. It's the Hartford stage.
We'll go
stage.
Back to that and see. Because...
And then I started to go down. My dad knew a guy who took pictures. So I had pictures taken in the back of his law office in New Britain, Connecticut. We got yellow pages and found managers' names from New York City, sent out a bunch of pictures. I got a call about 3 months later. My dad laughed as he was driving me down, like, "Well, this is ridiculous." And 6 months later, I was on my first series.
Which was?
Oh, which was God. Don't Just Sit There on Nickelodeon.
Don't Just Sit There.
Oh my God, wait a minute. Right. So where'd you guys shoot that?
We shot at 55th and 9th, Unitel Studios in New York City.
What was that show about? Because I remember that.
We were a young talk show. We had a band. We had special guests. We did skits. It was like a young SNL.
Don't Just Sit There.
Yeah, that was us. So Matt, Allie, Wendy, and Will.
Where are those people now?
Matt, I think, still lives in Connecticut. Wendy, Wendy became a producer. She produced, was Steve Irwin's producer, I think, right up to the time he was killed.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Allie disappeared at like 18, and I don't know what ever happened.
Is she in a sex cult with Allison Mack?
I don't think so. I think
just
Allison
curious.
Mack is a little younger. Then I was on Nickelodeon until I was 15, and then they called me to do, to audition for a show called The Untitled Ben Savage Project.
And that was funny. Your audition was out of New York.
The story for the shows how talent is one thing, but luck is so much better in this business. They called me to read for the Untitled Ben Savage Project, and I got sick that day, so I didn't go. And they cast somebody else, and they shot the pilot with a different kid, was fine. His acting was fine, but Ben was 11, and it was supposed to be the older brother, and the kid was only like an inch or two taller than Ben. So I always say that actor is 6 inches taller and I'm not sitting here right now. So they recast him and they called me in again from New York. I read for the part and I came out here, Michael Jacobs. I had done audition for Almost Home. Remember that one?
Was that the one Chad Allen was on?
No, that was something else with Home.
Okay. It. All right.
This is the one with Jason. It was Jason Mars and Brittany Murphy.
Oh,
Lee Norris.
Yes, yes.
So the audition for that role was between Jason Mars and myself and Shiloh Strong. And then for Boy Meets World, it came down to Jason Mars and myself and Shiloh Strong.
Stop it.
So
Shiloh Strong is Ryder Strong's older brother.
And yeah. Shiloh and Ryder were with the same agency as I was.
Who were you with?
Savage.
Yeah, Judy Savage, who had like... Oh, she was like in my head, like the, I've got all the kids.
But she's not like that.
She had all the kids.
No, she's not like that. It's always
Judy. Oh, Judy. I still talk to Judy.
That's awesome.
Love her to death.
Yeah. I think, but was Ben with her too? She had like most of the cast, the boy.
Yeah, she had, she was the, in the 90s, the top boutique child agency ever. Yeah.
No, my agent at the time was a guy. His name was Chris. I won't say his last name, so I don't know what he's doing now, but the agency is gone. But he would, every time he talked to me, he would have some different ailment that he was working through during the conversation. So he would say things like, "Hey, Will, it's Chris. I got to talk quickly. My lungs are filling with fluid, but you have an audition tomorrow." And it was always something different, no matter what it was. It was like, I have an inner ear infection, so we're going to make this quick. But it was hysterical. It was just always one thing or another with Chris. So I don't know what he's doing now either.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, I got cast as Eric. We had been picked up for 13 episodes. Everyone assumed we'd do 13 episodes. And 7 years later, we were still going.
But when amazing. TV was like
awesome.
TV.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like those situation comedies, multi-camera comedies, live audiences.
Yeah.
Those were the heydays. Yeah. I mean, let's talk Roseanne for a second.
Because
we rebooted it. And have you watched it?
I have not. I hear from some people, I hear it's wonderful. From other people, I hear it's a bit much.
I think it's fantastic.
That's what I've heard from other people too.
I think it's so smart.
I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
Listen, I don't agree with any of her politics.
Me either.
But that's okay.
And that's okay.
But it's a TV show.
But it's a TV show, and I love that she's putting both sides of the spectrum.
I mean, Brandon was a little like, "Oh, so they're going to make Lori Metcalf crazy because she's liberal." And
well,
I was like,
then Brandon's reaching.
Well,
but
I
isn't one
right.
of the characters also like transgender and what? Like they're really trying to hit every.
They're hitting everything, but it's still. It's still quintessential Roseanne.
Yes.
Well, that's good.
I felt, she was always a character that had her own opinions and was like a little bit, brash and opinionated and stubborn and all of that stuff. So
you don't have to agree with somebody's. That's one of the problems I think in our society right now is everything seems to be boiled down to politics. And I'm getting to the point where I just don't care what your politics are anymore because everybody, it's become so tribal in the United States now where everybody has to pick a team. And I'm just not doing it anymore. I can't.
Yeah.
Well, it's the first show for me that reminds me, and it has, it's nothing like the show, but the style of the show and the fact that they're getting away with so much makes me happy. It takes me back to All in the Family and the Archie Bunker times.
Yes.
Because we can't do that kind of TV anymore, which sucks because it's real life.
Some of it is good and some of it, I mean, again, I'm a television junkie. where I never wanted to be a movie star ever in my life. I only wanted to be on television. I never wanted to be Michael J. Fox in Back to the Future. I only wanted to be Michael J. Fox on Family Ties.
Right.
That was it. So television, to me, to this day, every day I watch an episode of MASH. It's my favorite show of all time. So there's certain things that you can't get away with anymore that it's probably better that you can. I mean, the only black character on MASH was named Spear Chucker.
So yeah, I think that's great. Yeah.
It's horrifying. I mean, that's horrible.
But just a sign of the time.
I agree. But it's also, Archie, you know, you're talking about All in the Family, all these shows like that. These were plays every week in people's homes.
Right.
That has since gone away. It's all ba-dump bump. And it's comedy is music, and the music is just the steady beat now. There's nobody plays off key anymore. It's a little ridiculous. So hopefully shows like Roseanne are bringing it back.
Yeah.
To where it's everyone's going, oh, everything's being rebooted. Well, everything's being rebooted because people miss when TV was great.
Right. Yeah.
And it's just not anymore. So it's really sad, but hopefully it's kind of coming around again.
So you did 7 seasons of Boy Meets World.
We did.
Playing which character?
I played Eric Matthews.
And he was
the older brother.
Goofy older brother.
Right. Okay.
With the beautiful long golden locks of hair.
Yes, you did.
Oh, so what age was that from?
I was 16 when I was cast. I did 16 to 24.
So did your parents come here with you?
No.
So who was your guardian?
The first year I moved here, my guardian was my oldest brother's fraternity brother, who was also moving to Los Angeles.
Wow.
My parents have been married for 50 some odd years. We're an incredibly close family. But they also, like I said, both my parents are lawyers. My father's almost 80 years old. He's still in private practice. He was a retired captain in the Navy in the JAG Corps. My mom ran all 3 courts in Connecticut. It was one of those things where it's like, if you want to go do this, we love you and support you, but we can't give
we
up our lives
yeah.
so you can go do that. You've got to move out and go do that. So at 16, I was living at the Oakwood Apartments. And
we all have lived there.
God, the
all
Oakwoods. Lived
there. Yeah, it was Wednesday night. I was in my bedroom in Avon, Connecticut. Thursday night, I was sitting by a hot tub with the Doublemint twins and the kid from Free Willy.
Shut
And I was
I know that kid.
Going, what the hell just happened to me?
The Doublemint twins.
Yep.
Well,
and the
totally.
Kid from Free Willy.
And the kid from Free Willy.
Those Oakwood apartments, they
house
so
Robin
many
man.
Children, child actors.
Child actors and divorced men. That's it. That's all that was there.
Yeah.
It's true. Child actors and divorced men.
Well, that's a scene.
exactly. But it was just a total flip of my life. And then you have to grow up real fast. I walked by the pile of clothes twice before I realized no one was going to wash it but me.
Yeah.
And so did you have a car here? Or?
Yeah. Yeah, I was driving. I still have the same car that I had then. I still own it. My 1986 Toyota Celica GTS. Still have it back in Connecticut.
It works.
Amazing.
Yeah. It's
You are kind of nerdy.
I'm a total dork and nerd in the greatest way.
He was saying it earlier before we started, and I was like,
God. Proud of it.
No, it's fine. Yeah. No, it's just good because we've never had a nerd before.
Ever?
I don't think so.
Oh, God. We're wonderful people.
Oh, God.
Wait a minute. Okay, so 7 years, right? So you're pretty much growing up with these kids.
We absolutely grew up together.
And
they're younger than you. I mean, by how much?
I was the old guy at 16. Ben was 11 when I met him. Danielle was 11 or 12. Ryder was closest in age to me, and he was like 13.
Got it.
But it was, we had, I mean, I don't know what your set was like, but our set was, we were the Brady Bunch. Like, we almost never fought that I can remember. We really grew up together. We really loved each other. It was pretty spectacular.
And you finished school on set, basically.
I did. The first year I finished. And then I went to one half a year of college out here in Burbank.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote a paper that would have gotten me a C in high school that they wrote A+. This is the event I went, I can't do this. This is not right. So I left. Yeah. And I've just been working ever since.
Wow.
Yeah.
And when did Kim Possible happen?
Kim Possible, let's see. So the first animated series I did was called Batman Beyond. That was 97, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
So that ended and Kim Possible started right when that, I want to say Kim Possible started in 99, 2000.
Okay. So you were still, you were just finishing Boy.
So I had 2 very popular, very long running series, which were Boy Meets World and Batman Beyond. And both of them ended on the same Thursday.
What?
I went in the morning and recorded my last Batman Beyond, and I went that evening and filmed the last Boy Meets World.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Did you guys know prior? I mean, was there a season finale?
Yeah.
A series finale?
We had the 1-hour series finale with the flashback shows, and let's see what these guys are doing. Yeah. So we were lucky that we got to... I mean, technically, I guess you're canceled, but we really weren't. The show just ended.
Right.
And we knew it was coming and all that kind of stuff. So we got to do the big finale.
Do you know I did an episode of Boy Meets World?
In Florida, right?
No.
Which episode did you do a boy?
I did an episode right after Step by Step ended. I think it was like the first or second job I had right after Step by Step, and I was came on as a guest star, and the episode revolved around Danielle and Ben. They were, I guess, engaged at the end or together. I can't remember.
Yeah, well,
exactly.
No, they got married.
They got married, right? Eventually, so I think they were engaged. Anyway, but they were looking for new couple friends, and myself and this other actor that were cast were like, they're new couple friends. So I get the job. We do the first day of rehearsal, and then that night, I think I got a call from my agent saying, they have no time for the storyline. It's getting cut.
No, you're kidding me.
Yeah.
Well, what, Michael Jacobs, first of all, was notorious for firing people.
Yes.
You didn't get fired, which is nice. They just cut your part out.
Yeah, they just cut. I mean, literally, I thought I got fired for a second. No. And then they were like, no, they're not recasting it. Like, the whole...
It's good. The
it's
whole
a C-story,
story
and they have no time for it.
Well, it's better than hearing, hey, I was on the show and you and I made out, because I've heard that before.
Oh, hilarious.
Because like, the first season, they didn't know what to do with my character, first season or two, so it was just different girl after different girl just kissing. That's, like, all they did.
Yeah.
They brought in Kerry Russell, and that was my first on-screen kiss, and from that moment on... It was just like every week I'd make out with some. So I've had actresses come up to me like, we made out. Like, wait, really? Sorry.
I don't remember.
I've known Carrie for years.
She was my first on-screen kiss during our first ever run through. Our teeth bumped and I was mortified. So I was like, oh my God, she's better at this than I am. And she's done this before. And oh God, I was absolutely terrified.
No, and that was Carrie, curly hair Carrie.
Yes, big, floppy, curly hair. She was amazingly sweet to me.
She's the nicest person
we
ever.
We used to have very nice conversations. I think we used to talk about music. She was there for the week, but she was an absolute sweetheart, and she made that what was a terrifying experience for me a heck of a lot easier. That was also the same episode where I kind of found my comedy chops a little bit, because we kept shooting this one scene with her over and over. And Michael, who's notorious for just, he just kind of yells, and he does it in his way where you just hear, now, and you just hear that from off camera. We just kept doing it. It was like, 11:30, 12 o'clock at night. And finally, I just made this ridiculous noise because I didn't know what to do. And the whole place erupted. And that's when I realized, like, oh, you can do random things to get laughs.
Right.
So she was there when I kind of like found my comedy chops. But.
So did Michael direct every season, every episode?
No, he didn't. He doesn't direct. He just, quote unquote, doesn't direct. He's Michael.
He runs the show.
I mean, this is a guy. He's Dinosaurs, Charles in Charge, My Two Dads, Boy Meets World, Almost Home, The Torkelsons. He was the '80s kind of for family television. And Michael is Michael. He was always very sweet to us, but Michael's notorious for his note sessions. So we were kids and we would rehearse all day long and go to school. And we'd have a run through at 4:30 and we'd be done at 5:30 and we'd all sit there as a big group and we'd be in notes till 7:30, 8 o'clock at night. I mean, literally going page one, line one, here you go. And that was every day.
And he's very like he likes line readings. He's very he wants it the way he wants.
He does until we found ourselves. And once we found ourselves, then he was way more hands off. I mean, it came to the point where at the end, Michael and I would have ongoing bets about dialogue, where he would say, we're changing this line. I'd say, well, we haven't even said it in front of the audience yet. It's not funny. All right, well, I'll bet you that I can get a laugh on that line. All right, let's go. And we would bet almost every episode.
That's great, though.
What's funny and what wasn't. So he certainly took the reins off a little bit. But, we called, when you watch the first kind of season of the show, not even the first season, it's like the first four or five episodes, they're always in the cafeteria scene. And in the cafeteria scene, there'd be Ben and Ryder and then a third kid sitting in the chair. And every week that third kid changed to the point where we just started calling it the death chair, where whoever was sit there, if they even made it to the show, would never make it to a second one. A lot of them were fired halfway through. And finally, they just started giving all the third kids lines, whoever he was supposed to be, to Ryder. And then it just became Ryder and Ben. So it was so weird. Michael was notorious for firing.
It's devastating to kids too, especially like...
But we weren't kids. You're not a kid. You're a professional actor.
Yeah.
I understand that, Will, but what I'm saying is...
That's how we were treated.
Right. Yeah. Because my point is that for me, like, auditioning was the work. Like, that was the job, right? Yeah. And once I booked the job, that was fun. And then to be on edge all the time like that, that would make me crazy because I already did that. I already went through that. Don't make me,
It was, and I don't want to set it up like it was a bad set, because it wasn't. It was an absolutely wonderful set. It was just that Michael knew what Michael wanted. He'd been doing this forever. His first Broadway play, I think he was 24 when he wrote it and it was on. And what Michael wanted, Michael got. So he was certainly not a tyrant. He never yelled in front of us. He was a notorious yeller, apparently, but we really never heard
him. Right.
He was just more, he would give, we'd always make fun of him because he'd give these just completely obscure references to us. He'd say to Ben, like, no, no, no. You see, you're doing it like Daniel's Red Jalopy from 1938. I don't want that. And we'd be looking at him like, what the hell does that mean? He's a musician. So he would just come up to us and we'd hear things like, you're giving me ba 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 ba. I want ba ba ba. So it was, that was constant. That's
I've heard all of these.
I can relate to that. Was he part of the reboot?
Oh yeah, Michael's Michael. Michael still was just as involved with every aspect of the reboot, and I got to see a completely different side of him because this time, for one episode, I was in the writer's room, and I remember him looking at me one time as I'm fighting over dialogue, and he said, "I hope this teaches you that you got to be more open with your writing." And I looked right at him and I said, "No, this teaches me that I got to be sitting where you are." And he just laughed and went, "Yeah, you're probably right." So it's one of those things.
So where, you get the call, "Hey, we're gonna bring it back."
No. No, I never got the call. We're going to bring it back. I found out Girl Meets World was coming back because it was on CNN.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Both Ryder and I found out that way, which we were still pissed about.
Okay, so wait.
Fair. And Michael has since apologized for that.
But right, so talk me through this process then, because who's involved before you find out?
I think it's Michael, Danielle, and Ben, I believe.
Okay.
Are the only ones that know at this
point. So it's now titled Girl Meets World.
Yes.
And it's based on Danielle and Ben's characters. Having kids, right. Which is a daughter.
A daughter, correct. Right.
A daughter and a son they have.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's really her, it's the daughter's show, really.
Correct.
Right.
And Ben now is like the Mr. Feeny in a way because he's gone back to the school.
He's the teacher. And Rowan Blanchard was cast as Riley, and she's a great little actress, and so is Sabrina Carpenter, was her friend. The cast they put together, I still think at their age, were better than we were at our age.
I believe that.
It's true. They really were. They were much more confident as actors as we were. But they also came up in a much different world that I find horrible.
Yeah.
We didn't have any of the social media crap. We didn't have any of that. I've got this many followers and you've got this many followers.
Dude, we had Thomas
so
Guides.
Weird.
Horrifying. The two things people told me to buy when I came to LA, the Thomas Guide and the club. Remember
that? Yes.
Everybody had was a Thomas Guide and the club for your car.
I tried to explain the Thomas Guide the other day to somebody and they're like, what's a Thomas Guide? I'm like, it's a paper navigational system. Yeah,
it's a map.
It's a
giant like novel.
Yeah,
it's like
it
crazy. Yeah.
It was horrifying.
So you're watching CNN.
No, Ryder apparently got a call from CNN saying, would you like to comment on the new show Girl Meets World? And we both went,
What show?
Yeah, like what? And I remember distinctly that day in a very, very passive aggressive way, emailing Michael Jacobs going, so what have you been up to? And he wrote me this long thing back. I'm so sorry. This was terrible of me. I shouldn't have done it. It was very contrite. As well, he should have been. That was kind of a dick move. But he knows that. And then it was like, what do you want to do? Do you guys want to come back? Do you want to be on it? Do you want to help? And I said, I want to write. He went, well, I can't let you do that.
Really?
Yeah, because I'd been writing.
You've been writing a long time, though.
I had. I sold my first screenplay at 18. I think I'm still the youngest freelance writer in the history of Disney. I wrote the Winnie the Pooh movie when I was like 17 or 18.
Wow. You did?
I did. They bought that for me and then hired me to do the rewrite. Never got made, but I ended up selling that to them while I was doing Boy. And then I wrote for, you know, Transformers, Thundercats. I wrote the pilot for Teen Titans Go.
Hold on a second. I did not know all this. So are you a Disney like freak? I mean, you love this Disney, like, I mean, everything, like, it's...
No, I just happened to
I mean, like, who at 17 goes, I want to write Winnie the Pooh?
Well, because I came up with such a great idea. Okay. I'm an idea guy, so when I came up with the idea, I called my agent and I said, can you get me on the phone with somebody from Disney? And he went, fine. I pitched him the idea, which I still think is great and they should still do, which is, it was before the Smurfs and all this other stuff that was live action animation. I said, what I want to do is a live action animation, Winnie the Pooh, where... Christopher Robin at 8 years old is playing with his animated friends. The parents think he's going a little nuts because he's playing with people they can't see. So they move him away from the Hundred Acre Wood. So meanwhile, the Hundred Acre Wood is bought by a company about to be destroyed. So Winnie and Tigger hop a plane 10 years later to find Christopher Robin at college to bring him back to help save the wood. So he wakes up after a fraternity party with Winnie and Tigger at the foot of his bed.
Oh my God.
That's so cool.
That's like, it's like Ted kind of.
Yeah,
like,
right. And this was again, this was
before your time.
1990 whatever when I sold this. And so I pitched them over the phone. He called me back 10 minutes later, said, we love this. We want to buy it. And I said, well, I want to write it. He kind of laughed. And I said, give me one shot. And I think they kind of went, they acquiesced. Fine, we'll let you write the first draft, kind of thinking nothing's going to happen. And I'll never forget the call I got. He called me and he went, this is really good. We want to hire you to do the rewrite. So, yeah, we thought it was going to happen. And then he called me, unfortunately, about 6 months later and said, because Disney was in this huge legal battle with A.A. Milne's company
mm-hmm.
when it came to Winnie the Pooh. So nothing Winnie the Pooh was happening. And then I think they hired somebody else to rewrite it again years later, and nothing ever really happened.
I think it'd be a huge hit.
Do they still own it?
I think they still own it. They must. I mean, I don't know. But it's also one of those things where it's Disney, so it's not like, I'm going to take it and pitch it somewhere else.
Yeah,
like,
no,
you can't
of course.
Really do anything about it.
But I'm just but curious.
I'm serious. I think that would be huge
right
now. I think it'd
be huge. I think so, too. It was also...
Can you imagine, some, 20 years later, they're like, hi,
so
Will,
too.
We'd
yeah.
like to up your
you
option
should,
on the Winnie the Pooh script?
Find out where it's at.
I wouldn't mind doing that. It's fine. I had some great visuals in there. You know, at one point, Winnie's painting with some fraternity brothers, and he gets paint on his shirt, so they put him in a Grateful Dead shirt, so he looks like the dancing bear, and...
So
there was some
funny.
Really cool
so
kind of Winnie the Pooh things.
Well, not only that, but there's so much room for sequels. And
yeah.
Well, and I feel like a movie like that, that you can take your kids to where there are, nods to obviously
everybody,
adult
sure.
humor.
It's like a Pixar
but like it's
kind of.
Going, yeah, it's going over the kids' heads. Yeah. That's kind
so,
of.
So, okay, back to your passive aggressive note.
So then, yeah. So then he wrote me this long thing, just kind of apologizing. I never should have done that. That wasn't cool. And I've been so busy working on it, and we weren't even sure if it was going to happen. And from that point on, he kept us in the loop on everything.
That's nice.
Which was nice. And at that point, my anxiety was still kind of off the charts, so I didn't want to be on camera.
But
so
you said he said you can't write.
Yeah. Well, it was one of those things where he said, again, there's a big difference between being on ABC and being on Disney Channel.
Right.
Especially monetarily. So it's like where we had a writer's room on Boy Meets World, where that was probably 20 people. I think there was 5 or 6.
Right.
And he brought a number of them back from Boy Meets World to get that original tone. So he said, I can't put you on staff, but I will if you do 3 episodes on camera, I'll let you write a 4th one. I'll let you write one. So that's what, kind of the deal we struck. And he was good to all of us. Ryder Strong and his brother Shiloh ended up directing 25 episodes. Which I never wanted to direct, so that wasn't an option for me. But Danielle directed a bunch of episodes. Ben directed a bunch of episodes. So he really, really did help us in whatever we wanted to do to kind of get to that next level in our career. But that year I'd sold something 10 scripts already. So it was kind of okay, great, let me just write one and bust it out because I have this deadline and that deadline and this deadline. So I was writing for most of the animated series that I was on, which was fun. So that
is that common? It feels to me
Really.
Not to be writing on shows that you're also
not really.
Doing.
So it certainly happens, but it's with animation, especially with the animated series, these actors are normally on 7 or 8 different shows at a time.
Right.
Whereas I was normally on 1 or 2. I mean, I'm one of those actors where I think I'm very good at what I do, but I don't do 50 voices.
Right.
I do 5. So, if they need young hero, they'll call me.
Right.
So there's a lot of those shows.
What's
that I'm
your doing. Young hero voice? I'm just curious.
Well, it depends on what my hero is.
Well, what's your latest hero?
Well, that's just Star-Lord. Star-Lord's just me. So this is kind of Star-Lord as me. But Bumblebee was down here, and Batman was down here, and
then there's Ron Stoppables all the way up here. So
oh,
there's
how funny.
Different yeah. kind of you're jumping around.
Different versions of your own.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So yeah. It's fun, but. I was able to concentrate on the shows I was doing. And the same thing happened on every show where I go, I want to write an episode. And they'd kind of go, okay.
But then
they'd
write
come
one.
Back to me and go, okay, we want you to do 4 more.
Well, because so you're really funny, Will.
It was also
you're really,
it was
really funny.
Thank you. But the thing that was amazing was I wasn't writing comedies. It was all, I'm also, again, nerd and a total fantasy nerd where every novel I read is 1,200 pages long and it's book 1 of 14. So those are the ones, that's where they like to delve in. Like when I was writing Thundercats, he came to me and he's like, you did a lot of themes I didn't know. I was like, yeah, it's basic fantasy novel stuff.
Right.
So
you play Dungeons and Dragons.
I do. First of all, don't say it with that attitude. Yes, I play Dungeons and Dragons.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with it.
Aren't you?
Damn right there's not. It's
don't
brilliant.
You do the, have you done the podcast? The Dungeons and Dragons podcast?
Oh, you mean
is it Glass Cannon?
No. I've done a number of episodes of Critical Role, which is them.
Critical Role.
Them
yeah.
playing
okay.
D&D on camera.
Yes, got it. That's
all,
the one we were
all voiceover
about.
Actors. Are you kidding? I went to a convention with 2 of them in Australia. They had a 4-hour line.
Dude, it's huge.
Huge.
Can I tell you about my recent foray into the world of nerdery?
Please. Nerddom.
Nerddom.
Right.
Okay. I just did my first podcast for an RPG tabletop game.
Okay.
I am a character in an RPG, and I've done 2 episodes, and I still haven't died.
That's amazing.
And I,
tell me
I,
how much fun. Isn't it,
it is
so much fun?
So wait, much fun.
Thank you. It's
wait,
stupid
Christine,
fun.
Hold. What? what are you talking about?
Yeah. So it's okay. So Dungeons and Dragons is like an RPG tabletop.
I don't know what
like
RPG is.
Role playing.
Okay.
It's so, improv class with dice.
Yes.
Okay, great. So but you have to like be like these weird characters.
Well, you get to create your character. You
exactly.
Do whatever you
want. All right, what's your character?
My character is a sorcerer, kind of like witch. All right. I can do, I cast a lot of spells. I don't have great, like, you know, I'm not like a physical character.
Okay,
where
so you don't
have
a lot of combat skills.
Swords. No, not a lot of combat things. This is the first one I've ever played like this. So I was a little like, I don't know what I'm doing. And then I start rolling dice and casting spells and like boiling people's blood and making like voices. And I
sucked in.
I got so sucked in. When I killed this freaking demon.
Thank you.
I screamed so loud. I was so proud of myself.
Thank you. So anyway, it is so much fun.
It's called Tavern of Heroes.
You would sit
soon.
Down once and you would play
you would
once and you'd
it's
go,
so
I want to play again as soon as possible.
Okay, hold on. Christine.
What?
So you get called to do this podcast, right?
Yeah.
And had you ever done anything like this before?
Not really. I mean, I've played some pretty nerdy games like on the old computer, like Myst Riven.
Was great. Riven was great.
I played some of that kind of stuff in college.
But
so.
My point is like your improv, like how do you know you're winning or losing?
Well, you're doing because you have so many health points. And essentially when, you know, different die are rolled and the bad guy is like clubbing you or swording you or stabbing you or doing whatever that bad guy is doing, your health points go down. And if your health points go down so much, you die. Yeah. And then
got
you
it.
Lose.
And
you
so get there is there roles. Is a yeah. system. Mm-hmm.
It's also especially like for something like Critical Role. Matt Mercer is the DM. Is the guy who's in charge.
Dungeon master.
Correct. And he tells a story that he's created, and it's some of the most brilliant storytelling you'll see anywhere in the world, arguably anywhere.
And do you get like spanked and stuff in these things? Or?
No, you don't get.
No,
spanked?
It's not. It's not like dungeons. Like it's not BSDM. Or
yeah,
whatever
it is. Yeah, it's not 50 Shades
it's
of
like,
Grey.
You're talking about two different
Shades
things,
of Dragon,
my
friend. Yo, it's awesome.
I do want to tell you my experience with the reboot of Girl Meets World.
Okay. Go ahead.
You were on it, and they cut your storyline.
No,
you got fired.
No,
you got pregnant.
No, so. As Girl Meets World, I guess they had sort of pitched it out, Michael and Danielle. Maybe they had been in talks, and it looked like it wasn't happening.
Yeah.
So in that interim, Michael and I had a show.
Really?
Yes, that Danielle was also involved in. And we started pitching it. So the three of us went out with two other producers. We start pitching this show. We went everywhere. NBC, ABC, VH1, MTV, I mean, Fox. Like, we literally had every pitch everywhere. And yeah. I have to say, it was an amazing experience because I was going in the room with someone who was clearly so good at pitching.
Yeah, he's crazy.
And I've it was, it I mean, it was a great, yeah. you know, lesson in all of it. And the show was actually really cute. It's actually wasn't, it was similar to Hollywood Darlings in the way that Danielle and I were playing lifelong friends
okay.
who had been
as yourselves.
Of, yes, as ourselves, okay. who had been on TV shows. But the whole thing was scripted. Like, we had completely different lives, but right. we were playing as though we were roommates now and living together and that kind of thing. So anyway, it was a very cute idea. VH1 made us an offer. It was VH1, but they made
Still,
us an offer.
Yeah.
That same day, Disney came back.
There you go.
And maybe it was leverage. I don't know. But Disney came back and said, we want to do Girl Meets World.
And that was it.
And our deal fell through.
Yep.
Well, because they had Danielle. They wanted Danielle. I mean, Danielle couldn't do both.
Well, and Michael couldn't do both.
And Michael yeah. couldn't do both.
Yeah, that I don't know if he was using his leverage, but I'm sure it was.
I'm sure it helped.
Yeah, I'm sure it did too.
So it was a bummer.
Yeah.
You know? And I was like, oh, well, you know, at the very least, maybe he'll have me on the show. I never even auditioned once.
Really? No. That's weird. Yeah, that's weird.
That is weird.
It was a fun set.
I did shadow like 5 times.
Oh, you
thinking
did?
Thinking okay. that I was going to be able to direct. And that didn't happen either.
Really? Yeah, no, the directing, I just never wanted to do any of that. I had no desire to do any of that kind of stuff.
So
and
it was kind
after writing
of a bummer.
Her once, I didn't want to do that again either.
Yeah, yeah, I'm it's sure.
Like, so Girl Meets World, because Disney has
three
this,
seasons.
Right, cause, yeah. and that usually they go four.
No, they usually
three.
Go three.
65 and out.
I thought they did 100.
Nope, 65 Mm-mm. and out. Kim Possible was the first show ever to do more than 3 seasons. And there was no internet at the time. It was all fan write-in.
Well, wait a minute. Whoa. What about Hannah Montana? Wow.
That was after Kim Possible.
Okay. Yep. So then, but you guys didn't do a full 65, did you?
For what?
Girl Meets World?
Yeah.
Oh, you did?
Three full seasons.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk Kim Possible for a
minute. Okay.
Because there's a lot in the news. We had Christy Carlson on
last month. She is the worst. I hate her. awful, awful person, and I can't get over that smell.
Oh yeah, she's a, yeah. not a nice human no, being at all.
Terrible smell too.
so there's Christy, there's been rumors of this Kim Possible movie happening,
yeah,
and again, you guys found out via the internet.
Yeah, kind of. I mean,
she found out the same way too.
We knew something was kind of happening. We had heard there was something possibly kind of happening, but like not like months before.
Right.
I mean, this was...
This is a live action feature they're doing.
And
okay.
Of course, as much as I'm sure they'd love to have a 41-year-old Ron Stoppable. yeah, hopefully, I mean, you know, hopefully it's good and it does justice. I'm one of those people, I have no problem with kind of passing the torch to the next generation and letting other people handle the characters. I think it's great. So I just hope they do it justice because it was a very well-written television show.
It was. I just hope that because there's so many fans still of that show.
Yeah, huge.
I just think it would be a great nod to all of those fans and to the, you know, the rapport that you guys created on that show to have you in there in some capacity.
Yeah, it depends on what capacity. If they wanted to give us actual roles, it's something I'd be interested in. If they want to do the Brady Bunch thing where it's some guy we're sitting at a table going, hi.
I get that.
But it's, yeah. I mean, it's certainly if they wanted us involved in some legitimate capacity, I would do that. But the kind of lip service thing, I wouldn't be interested.
I don't know what that means.
You know, like... When they have a cameo and it's like you play like the waitress.
Yeah,
you're like, hey guys,
they're like, hi.
I'd be like yeah. fuck off.
Yeah, like I'm not interested in that. I probably wouldn't use those words, but
I would.
But yeah, I probably wouldn't be interested in that. But.
So wait a minute. So who would be playing Kim Possible?
Well,
I don't think they've cast anybody yet.
Yeah. It'd be a young girl.
Yeah.
Why, how old is Kim?
High school age, 15.
Oh, okay.
15, 16.
And while Christy could probably, you know, still pull it off, you know, I think it would be.
You think Christy could pull off 16?
I'm kidding. God. Well, no, she does look
old,
quite young.
But she's just the voice, so it's different. If they're going to do it in live action, then it's a whole new ball game.
Yeah.
That's fair game.
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
Certainly. Why are you trying to make it controversial, Christine? I'm trying to figure you out right now.
Well, I think we talked about it on Christy's podcast and we talked about her feelings about it. So I was just kind of curious about what Will.
It's probably bittersweet. I'm assuming it's going
to
be.
Yeah.
It's not even bitter to me. It's just kind of sweet. I love, you know, the show's been off the air for so long and there's a whole new generation of people that would love it. And the fact is, as a voiceover artist, you can still do the voice. So my guess is if the movie comes out and is successful in any way, I don't see why they wouldn't reboot the cartoon. And if they're going to reboot the cartoon, they would come back to us.
See,
so,
that's how you got to think. That's how you got to think about it.
Yeah,
that's see, Christine,
shut up, Allah.
To me, it's all gravy. It's we go to these conventions and we'll have people like waiting in line dressed like Kim and Ron, and
wow,
it's pretty great.
That was part one with the wonderful Will Friedle. Will Friedle? Will Friedle? You decide. We'll be back next week with part two because that guy just cannot stop yammering. Hey, Pot, it's Kettle. You're black. Next week, we'll get into the strangest fan encounters, who Will Friedle has dated in the 90s, and anxiety issues that kept him from the screen for many years. You can follow Will on Instagram and Twitter at Official Will Friedle, and myself at Yo Lakin. Ella at Alec Led and Stephen Ray Morris at Stephen Ray Morris. Follow us at Worst Ever Podcast and Worst Ever PC on Twitter. And make sure you send us some comments and any questions you might have for Danielle Fishel for this Sunday's live show. You can email us at worsteverpodcast@gmail.com. Till next time. Thank you.